This is Katie Harth with Mission Network News, and today I've got Amy Ritchie in the studio with me with EFCA Reach Global, and we are going to be talking about human trafficking, and we're talking about it in two contexts. The over there, in a sense, it's in Kinshasa is where our focus is going to be, but then we're talking about it at home here in the U.S. as well, and I want to start with the at home, so to say, because so often I think people think of it as strictly an over there problem. But Amy, it's here too. And can you tell me more about that aspect as far as how does it take place in the U.S.? Where, because we're going to be talking about getting the church involved. So first of all, where should they be looking? What does it look like in the U.S.?
Wherever human trafficking takes place, you can usually start by asking yourself, who are the most vulnerable in my community? So when you look at a place like Grand Rapids or Des Moines, Iowa, or Miami, Florida, who are the most vulnerable in any of those places? There are some typical groups, disenfranchised youth, teenage runaways, immigrants, battered and bruised women, exploited children. The list goes on, but really that's who you can start looking at and start understanding their needs so that you can focus on prevention. A quick story, I was in at a conference, a youth conference for the EFCA just over a year ago, and the very first young girl that approached me was from Des Moines, Iowa, and she told me a story about her and her best friend being approached by a trafficker after they both ran away from home. Her best friend went with a trafficker. She said no and stayed in Des Moines and is working on repairing her relationship with her family. So it happens everywhere. Certainly if it happens in Des Moines, it happens in Grand Rapids, Michigan. There are also victims of human trafficking that we have been in the process of helping here right in Grand Rapids and in Michigan, the greater Michigan area, Detroit area. There are safe houses. There are people who help with counseling, and when they want to be repatriated back to their home countries, there's also situations like that. And so us speaking as the church, the Western church, if we can find points of intervention and get involved in the messiness of people's lives, we can help prevent this atrocity from ever happening.
And you brought a little visual aid, which our friends on the radio won't be able to see, but you can go to our Facebook page to check it out. But you have kind of this visual aid that you use, I'm assuming, when you're explaining in churches and stuff,
yes,
to kind of put context on the whole human trafficking issue.
So often we Westerners like to think in little boxes, and it's hard for us to wrap our minds around how complex this issue is. And in fact, it gets more complex day by day. So it's a ball of yarn and string, all different colors, all different textures, that's just wound up in one big mess. And there are loose strings, there are tightly wound areas. But really, this is what I use when I start explaining about the whole issue of human trafficking. When you start talking about victims of sexual abuse, when you start talking about pornography and its contributing factors to the whole area of human trafficking, you can talk about exploited children. You can talk about the people who are addicted to substance abuse, like drugs and alcoholism. And it really, like I said, it just goes on and on. And now you can add the whole refugee crisis on top of this, which has been going on for a number of years in other parts of the world, but we're just starting to understand and deal with that here in the U.S. So, yeah, it's a great visual aid, and you will have to go to the Facebook page to check it out, because it helps people understand the context and the complexity of the issue.
And I understand it helps people understand the solution, too, because in this article, you outline four ways that people can, you know, take action and actually make a difference, help end human trafficking. And you mentioned before we went on air that, you know, if we can take one of the strings, mm-hmm, or something out of this mess, can you explain it much better than I can? So can you talk about that for a second?
Part of the challenge of the issue is the complexity. So I say there's no quick band-aid. There is no way to just walk in and say, here's the five-step program to end human trafficking. However, we need to break it down so that we can understand and grapple with it. You know, it's like planning for a big upcoming Thanksgiving dinner. If you don't buy the turkey, you can never have the meal. And so today, you know, let's talk about just four areas that I identified. And just if we could start with one of these, foster children in the U.S. are a very vulnerable population. So oftentimes they end up as runaways or in the juvenile justice system. So if there are ways that you as an individual or your community group or your church can get involved in the foster care system, whether that's becoming a buddy for foster care children or whether that's even having families from your church become foster care parents with a support group so that they can have services available to them and help them be a support for their needs as well. And then the juvenile justice system kind of goes hand in hand with some of these population groups. But there are situations in most counties throughout the United States where you can sign up to be a buddy, for lack of a better word, to a child that is going through the juvenile justice system. You don't have to be a lawyer or a social worker or trained professionally. You just have to be a friend, and you are required to show up at their court hearing and potentially meet with them once outside of that setting so that you can just be a support and understand some of the struggles that they go through. Pornography is a huge issue all over the world, and unfortunately, much of the money that is driving the pornography industry comes from the U.S. The numbers are so high for addiction, and the years are getting younger and younger for addiction. So it's naive of us to think that this is not impacting our churches, and we need to have open and honest conversations. We need to hold people accountable, and we need to make sure that church youth groups are talking about difficult questions and issues like pornography and the abuse of pornography and how that affects even your psyche. God created sex for a monogamous relationship between a husband and wife. And so when we start watching porn, becoming addicted to porn, how that changes our outlook, it's a huge issue. And consumer accountability. It's easy for us to walk into any mega store or department store and purchase products that we don't understand where they come from, how they were made, who made them. The fishing industry in Thailand has come under recent scrutiny. It's hard to look at everything all at once. Coffee is another industry. Chocolate is an industry that's just notorious for using children in different parts of the world and then not even paying the children that are working. And so we need to become better consumers. We need to be more responsible. And instead of our pocketbook driving the decisions that we make in a store, we need to let our faith and our conscience and our understanding of what's happening in the world drive that. And so I encourage people to do research on the internet before you go shopping. I encourage people to ask questions of the companies that they frequent. Where is their cotton produced? How is their garment made? Where is it made? It's okay to ask these things. And if the store managers don't know, it's okay to ask them to find out. And then frequent stores that you know where the product is coming from. Buy local. Reuse things. Hand things down. It's just we need to become better consumers.
Where does this tie in with faith, gospel? Like, we're talking about some really big picture things and becoming better, you know, just more aware of the problem and everything. How does that honor God in everything that we're doing to address this issue?
I'm a very strong proponent for the Great Commission being worded as you are going, make disciples, preach the gospel, baptize people in my name. Often it's easy for us to think about going. Many people have gone on short-term mission trips, and so the trip or the magic begins when you get on the plane. No, in actuality, every day as we make choices and as we live our lives as believers, we are asked, and Jesus told us, to live our life in a way that other people would see his light, and that we would be the flavor, we would be the salt to our world. And so if we're going in and we're buying things simply to gratify our own desires and not thinking about a child who has not been paid, who is working on a fishing boat in China or Thailand, how is that serving as Jesus' hands and feet? We live in a very global world now, which makes some of those decisions more complicated. But we also live in a world where information is freely shared. And so we need to balance that tension, and we need to do the research, and we need to ask the questions and make the best decision that you can. It's impossible to know everything about every product. So I encourage people to start with one thing. If you drink a lot of coffee, if coffee is your thing, find out where your coffee comes from. Is it traded directly? Can you find out if the coffee producers are paid a fair wage? You know, do the research on the coffee that you drink. And when you understand that you're drinking responsibly, then move on to the next issue or the next product. And just one thing at a time, get your family involved. High school students are very encouraging to me in that they want to know where things are coming from and how they're made, and they want to be a responsible consumer. So it's a mindset, and it's a big shift for us culturally, so much so that it's going to take years to really see the impact, but it still is an important shift that we need to see happen.
I agree. And it while we're shifting things and paying attention to the issue here, we still have to be aware of things that happen in places like Kinshasa, Democratic Republic of Congo. And I understand that EFCA has some partners that are making a difference in this area. Can you explain to me how exactly, we'll explain the full story in the article at our website, but in our conversation today, how did EFCA come in contact with the Salinas? Yes, thank you. Can you just kind of backtrack to where that connection first started and how this amazing ministry, the Tabitha Centers, how it all began?
Yeah, I love talking about this story because so often we see biblical examples of God using ordinary people to do extraordinary things. And this is another one of those stories where Salinga and Claudine moved to the capital city of the DRC. And they moved there because Salinga was overseeing all of the EFCA churches, the evangelical free churches in Africa. And so for Claudine, this was a new shift. Their children were older, and she just started wondering, what does God have in store for me ministry-wise here? So she started asking him and praying about it, going into her community. And as she went, she started seeing women who were carrying their babies around on their hip. It's a very common picture of Africa that we've all seen in journals or articles or websites, people's accounts when they come back from different parts of Africa, and the challenges that these women face in supporting their child. And so it leads them oftentimes to a point of desperation where they're either willing to sell their bodies so that they can provide food and shelter and necessities for their child, or even to the point of saying, I can't do this. I don't have the resources for my child, so giving them up and not knowing even if it's a healthy situation that they're giving them up to. So Claudine started by just a simple Bible study and inviting women that she met on the street and asking them to come and hearing their stories and telling them about the fact that God loves them. It was a curriculum that we actually used in Ukraine with some of the HIV/AIDS people who were in rehabilitation centers. And so she started a Bible study. And these women would come early the next day or the next week because they were so eager to hear about God and his involvement in our lives and understanding who he is and who he wanted to be to them. And so she started thinking and praying more and said, you know, I need to do something. I'm telling them that they need to be responsible for their children and that God will provide, but I need to help them understand really what it means to provide for their child. So she is a fantastic seamstress, took in two sewing machines that she had extra and started teaching some of the women how to sew. Some of them really enjoyed that and were good at it. Some of them, it was more challenging or they didn't enjoy it. So then they started bringing others in to help them learn how to braid hair. And in this part of Africa, if you can sew or braid hair, you can make a living so that you can support yourself and your child. And so now, as you know, the Tabitha centers are just exploding. And this is a way that Claudine intervened in the lives of people in her community because she prayed and asked God how he wanted her to respond and what he wanted her to do. And so we can all do that. As we're going in Grand Rapids, as we're going in Chicago, as we're going in Naperville, as we're going in, you name the city, the community, the country, and God will show us what he wants us to do.
I'll just wrap it up with any other lasting comments you want to leave our listeners with, any, I guess, key points you want to drive home.
Human trafficking is an issue. I say it's real. It happens everywhere. And unfortunately, it seems to be growing. And so our response as the church, capital C, worldwide, is that we need to get involved. We need to get involved in the messiness of people's lives. And I'm a strong proponent that we need to focus on the prevention of human trafficking. With over 20 million people enslaved across the world today, it's not realistic for us to think that we can go rescue or save all 20 million. I know that we serve a God who restores and reconnects and redeems creation to himself, including people, no matter what the circumstance. But we also serve a God who is compassionate and loving and kind and just. And so he is asking us to get involved in people's lives at points of intervention where we can be tangible hands and feet of Jesus. And then I'll do a quick Ukraine update too.
Market and okay, quick Ukraine update. Thank you for adding that, and I'll let you take it from here.
Thanks. This month marks the 2-year anniversary of the original Maidan conflict in Kyiv, Ukraine. What started as a frustration of Ukrainians with the current corruption of a government eventually ended up in their former president fleeing to Russia and seeking asylum in Moscow. And today, unfortunately, has turned into an act of war between Russia and Ukraine. When the world has been silent, Russia has continued to cause problems and create havoc in eastern Ukraine. Kyiv is quiet at the time. It is still very stressful for people to live there long term, and they understand that that could change. But for the time being, Kyiv is quiet, and we're thankful for that. Please continue to pray for more. As we look at the world situation with Paris and the recent terrorist attacks and stories coming from all other parts of the world, please remember to pray for Ukraine and Russia as they continue to battle over eastern Ukraine.
And quick follow-up. I imagine you have friends and contacts from your time in Ukraine. Can you give us any updates about how this is impacting them, those in the church? As believers in Ukraine, how are they viewing this? Do they feel forgotten? Do they, what feedback are you hearing?
I think it's frustrating for Ukrainians to understand that they were the highlight of the evening news for about 3 to 6 months worldwide, and to see how they feel forgotten or that the world is silent and not getting involved in the situation. And I don't, this is not a political statement about whether anyone should be involved or not, but the feeling is one of, I would say, disappointment politically. But the great thing is that God is bigger than all of this. And you will find a sense of encouragement and a sense of hope for Ukraine and for its future generations, and a continued openness to the gospel. Ukraine is a unique situation in that even under communism, they had years and years of a strong Orthodox history. So many people have a cursory knowledge of God and of religion, but the challenge remains for believers to help Ukrainians understand that it is a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, and that that personal transformation is what brings about life change and heart change and the hope and salvation of the gospel.
And I'm glad we could end on that note, because it's so easy to look at the world situations and get discouraged. But thank you for sharing these updates and reminding us that, yes, we can make a difference. We can become involved in this situation, and there is a reason to hope. Again, I've been speaking with Amy Ritchie of EFCA Reach Global about a bunch of different topics. Amy, thank you so much for your time and being with us today on Mission Network News.
Thank you.